The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A 45-year-old man has been charged with a federal hate crime and state charges of attempted murder in Colorado after being accused of throwing Molotov cocktails at demonstrators who were attending a march in support of Israeli hostages held in Gaza. 12 people were injured in the attack, including a Holocaust survivor. To get the latest on this and the rest of events stateside over the long weekend, Terry Sheridan, Senior Director of News at WSHU Public Radio, joins me. Terry, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Pat.
Now, tell us exactly what happened at this demonstration, which is a regular one, I believe.
Yeah, it's a regular one. It was in Boulder, Colorado, and it is protesting or calling attention to the fact that there are still Israeli hostages in Gaza held by Hamas. Mohammed Sabri Suleiman, he is an Egyptian who lived in Kuwait for 17 years, approached the group, shouted things, and then threw the Molotov cocktails, the lit Molotov cocktails, at the protesters, at the gatherers, and then stayed at the scene. Now, police found 12 other Molotov cocktails, and Suleiman was also wearing one of those backpacks that you might see for applying a pesticide on gardeners use. Mm-hmm. But instead of pesticide, it was filled with gasoline.
And by just pumping that up and then lighting the thing, he had a flamethrower, a DIY flamethrower.
Pretty much a flamethrower, and that's what injured the people. Two of them very seriously. No one was killed, but two seriously. The rest did receive burns.
And the eldest of the victims, a Holocaust survivor.
Absolutely. I mean, again, that's one of the things that have caught the attention of the people here in the United States, and also caught the attention of the Trump administration and the FBI. And they point to this as a case of not just being a pro-Palestinian act, but an act of anti-Semitism.
Now, this man, he shouted "Free Palestine," and again, like the incident, the killings outside the museum in Washington. He did not try to escape, it would appear.
No, he stayed. You might have seen the video of him standing on a lawn, you know, shouting at both the people who were participating in the protest and at police who eventually did come and subdue him. But if you see in the video, you know, he stayed there. He had, as I said, you know, 14 other Molotov cocktails at the ready to go. So he was making a statement.
What is or was his status within the United States? How was he there?
He came into the United States. He and his family came into the United States in 2022 on a tourist visa. He overstayed his visa, so he was in the country without papers. And that is something that the Trump administration has picked up on and has gone back and attacked the Biden administration, saying that this is a case of their open borders policy. But no, he was in the country on an overstayed visa.
Moving on, the FBI is investigating attempts to impersonate the White House chief of staff, Susie Wiles.
This is a bizarre case. Yes, it appears that her personal phone was hacked, but the personal phone also had some very significant contacts in it. Members of the administration, senators, governors, business executives who either received phone calls or text, in many cases looking for money. Now, the phone calls were based, or FBI believes, where the voices were AI. It was an AI-generated copy of Susie Wiles. So they're investigating this. But as we've seen in the past with members of the administration, it seems that cybersecurity is lax within the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm. So her phone was hacked from without, I suppose, not from within, one presumes.
One presumes. Now, again, the FBI says, and this is where we get conflicting information. The FBI says they do not believe that this is a foreign country or a foreign entity is involved. However, other security experts say this looks like several things that China has done or China's spy agencies have done.
And they would say that one way or the other, I suppose. Now, she is chief of staff. And she promised a leak-proof White House. So this is deeply embarrassing for her and her mission.
It is deeply embarrassing and for her mission. But again, it's part of what we have seen in the first Trump administration and definitely in the second Trump administration, is never admit a mistake and attack people who are pointing out that you have made mistakes. So again, while it's deeply embarrassing, it's not necessarily fatal to Susie Wiles and her career at the White House.
Now, in many of Trump's appointments, looking at Kash Patel and the FBI or Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as health secretary, it seems that the qualifications required are ignorance and incompetence. And with the head of FEMA, he's pretty much done the same. A most extraordinary admission from him.
Well, it's also ignorance, incompetence, and a desire to dismantle the agency from within. David Richardson is the newly appointed or newly take over the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Group. And he told staffers in a briefing that he wasn't sure that there was an official hurricane season. There is. We are in it now. It's June 1st through November 30th. And the staff was baffled. At first, they thought that perhaps maybe he was being sarcastic or trying to make a joke. But it seems that he wasn't. Now, we are expecting a pretty active hurricane season, and this is the problem. Now, Richardson also has no direct disaster response, and President Trump created what he's called the FEMA Review Council to evaluate what FEMA does, but pretty much has told them to dismantle or downsize the agency completely. Mm-hmm. One-third of the staff has already been fired or has quit. But here's the other thing. Trump allies are mad at Richardson because he's not acting fast enough to dismantle the agency.
Now, many of the red states will be afflicted by hurricanes in hurricane season. Notably, Florida is often afflicted by it. They, of course, are one of Trump's pet states because he has a home in Florida. But without FEMA, many states will suffer, both in hurricane preparation and also in hurricane recovery.
Absolutely. We look at the case of North Carolina from the hurricane last year, and they're still struggling. This became a political football in the election last year, in which candidate Trump and his allies were accusing Biden and FEMA of actually taking money away from the recovery effort and spending it on, illegal immigration. But no, North Carolina, 6 months, 9 months after the hurricane, is still struggling. Still, there has been really very limited progress. And if FEMA goes away, it would be on the states to pick up the load. And many states, especially in red states, they don't have the financial resources to do so.
Now, it would mean that they have to probably increase property taxes or state sales taxes in order to meet that deficit. So, on the one hand, the federal government can claim all sorts of things, but if at local level you pay more anyway, it's not exactly what Trump would require to woo his voters.
Right, but it gets it off. It's part of his MO. It gets it off the federal books and puts it on the state books. We've seen this too with plans for Medicaid that are making their way through Congress now in that one big beautiful bill. A lot of the responsibility would be dumped on the states who don't have, even wealthy states, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, California, don't have the resources to pick up the slack.
Now, we know that Elon Musk has departed Doge. He is no longer formally, at any rate, involved in the US government. But the analysis of Doge from these early months seems to be that it may not have saved very much money, perhaps a couple of hundred million, but perhaps it's even cost more than it saved, because much of the work has to be done anyway, so they'll have to employ contractors, or there will be a deficit in the work done. It'll just pile up to eventually be done by perhaps even more employees. But yet Trump is determined to maximize his layoff of federal workers.
That's right. And in fact, he's going to the Supreme Court to make sure he has the authority to do so. There have been several lawsuits against the Trump administration saying that they don't have the authority for mass layoffs because money that has been allocated by Congress can't be canceled by the executive. It needs to be canceled by Congress. And also, Congress has the authority to eliminate departments. So That lawsuit has been filed by the Trump administration. The Supreme Court looks for a response by June 9th. But yes, it's the whole thing, as you said, Elon Musk and his cuts. He promised, I think, $3 trillion in cuts, but, you know, has delivered much, much less of that. But again, the confusion following that, work still has to be done. It'll be done by outside contractors. They said they found massive fraud, but they haven't said what that massive fraud was, nor have anybody been held accountable for fraud. And well, are you fired or are you not fired? If you're not fired, we still have to pay you. So again, just mass confusion. It's a mess. Just mass confusion.
Now, meantime, he set new deadlines for countries to line up and put their best offers forward to Donald Trump on tariffs. And I think he's got less than 24 hours to accept these offers from people. I don't think there are many offers forthcoming.
No, he has spoke about many offers. At one point earlier in May, he talked that 100 countries were seeking to, you know, call him up and make a deal. We've seen little deals, perhaps, you know, the most recent being with Japan or one Japanese company over steel prices. But no, there have been no major deals, no major breakthroughs, just a lot of saber rattling and a lot of backing down. And as we talked about last week, the whole taco syndrome, Trump always chickens out. So it remains to be seen what will happen with the tariffs. But the one thing that we do know is that damage has been done to the United States economy and damage has been done to the world's economy.
Now, we know how effective the Trump was in branding people like Little Marco and Crooked Hillary and so on. This taco name is likely to stick to him, and he'll hate that.
Oh, he already hates it. He was, again, one of the reporters who brought it up to him. You know, after she explained what it was, you can just see the rage boiling up. And yes, it is the taco meme. If you look at social media, has caught on. And whether we're talking Taco Donnie or Taco Mara, you know, again, it's something that is stuck and it's something that he does not like at all.
And I think people enjoy the food reference to it, you know.
It's also Mexican food.
Yeah, it's part of its appeal. Speaking of Mexico, the OECD has released a report this morning that says that Ireland will be the third most impacted by U.S. tariffs after Mexico and Canada, which is obviously terrifying for us. But at the same time, we are, I suppose, captive to the EU response, whatever that might be.
Yeah. And again, now this came out overnight, so there's not been much response in the United States to it yet. But again, it shows to the uncertainty over what the tariffs are going to be, uncertainty over layoffs, uncertainty over the economy and whether the recession just has a downhill effect. So, yes, obviously, if there is a trade war with the United States and Canada and Mexico, that's going to be bad. They're the biggest trading partners of the United States. And then, but the collateral damage, you know, to the rest of the world and the other trading partners is also significant.
Yeah, 50% tariffs now on aluminium and steel, which is something that will displease Europe, particularly, I suppose, on aluminium, and displease Canada particularly too. So the question is, will the taco president chicken out again?
Who knows? I mean, again, his supporters say, or they claim, that this is all part of it. He's not chickening out. He's just being a tough negotiator. And when he gives an outrageous hello, what we would say in the United States as a hello price, he gets results. You know, it's just meant to shock. But, you know, will he chicken out? Who knows? Again, Wall Street doesn't like it. The bond market doesn't like it. If we go into a recession, or it looks like we're going into a recession, yeah, we could see some chicken.
Finally, I should ask you about corruption in the administration. I mean, from this remove, it seems apparent when you're flogging pardons for cash, when you're taking 757s from Qatar, when you're making fortunes from Bitcoin maneuvers and all the rest of it. It does seem like this is an incredibly corrupt administration. Are the Republicans not seeing this at all?
The Republicans are saying, and I'm thinking of Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who says, well, he hasn't had time to look at this because he's been busy with other things. But they're saying that it's out in the open. So if it's out in the open, it can't be corrupt. But again, it just, we talk about the plane, we talk about the meme coins, we talk about the private clubs. It is, you can call it corruption, you call it anything you want, but it stinks.
It is corruption.
Yeah.
But I never thought that we'd see the day when you'd be comparing the United States to some banana republic somewhere. But that's the way it appears at the moment under Donald Trump. Thank you very much for joining us, Terry. That's Terry Sheridan, Senior News Director at WSHU Public Radio.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.